Good afternoon and welcome to Good News Updates with Living Compassion. I'm pleased to be joined by Ashwini this afternoon, who has agreed to be with us to talk about the Reflective Listening Buddies program, which is actually a program that's been part of practice for a number of years now, but it's gotten a really exciting new overhaul to bring it in line with this year of deepening practice. And so Ashwini, being the mastermind behind that overhaul, has agreed to be with us this afternoon to talk about it. So welcome, Ashwini.
Hi, Jen.
Hey. So what can we expect from the Reflective Listening Buddies program in 2012?
Deepening practice.
All right. That's handy.
Well, I think, you know, Jen, when we looked at what we wanted to change about the program, we really wanted to look at it and look at it from the perspective of, is the program embodying practice?
Mm-hmm.
And how can we actually help people deepen their practice through the Reflective Listening Buddies program?
Mm-hmm.
And there are two very specific things that reflective listening actually is about, right? One is to develop the skills of reflective listening, but the other is to actually really, really train to interact with someone else in the Sangha in the privileged environment, because that's what that call is all about. The way you create the call, the way you interact with your buddy, it all embodies the privileged environment, which is such a cornerstone of practice.
Mm-hmm.
And so starting from what is it that we want people to get from practicing in this program to how the program embodies practice is what we looked at when we were looking at revamping it.
Mm-hmm. So in other words, okay, so there's always been a very clear structure to how the Reflective Listening Buddies calls happen, which we can talk about in just a minute. But wanting to look at not only that, but the entire way that the program happens and the way that the Reflective Listening Buddies interact with each other in trying to set up their calls, et cetera, that in the same way Sherry's been talking about, as we deepen practice and as we expand in all these things we bring from our lives into practice, we want to make sure that the privileged environment is the cornerstone of all of it.
Exactly, and that the program in its structure and processes also embody the spirit of practice.
Yeah.
And so what we had discovered is that there were the number of people that were participating is growing. I mean, we had about 120 people doing reflective listening the last quarter that we ran it, and we want to support people in a very deep way in their practice.
Yeah.
And so how do we actually do that? So just to be much more specific, we had one really, really dedicated and committed administrator running the program for 120 people. And we had a bunch of policies and guidelines that had to be followed, but not really any way to support people in their practice. So what we've done is to actually have the program facilitated by trained practitioners. So we'll have multiple facilitators who will be overseeing groups of people doing reflective listening so that people's practice, if they have questions, can be answered from a practice perspective, not necessarily just from a content guide rule perspective about how the program logistics work.
So
that's one change. So everybody, a group of people will have a committed facilitator. The support calls will therefore be smaller, so everyone has a chance to participate in the support program.
Uh-huh.
At the end of every call, the participants have the opportunity to send a process email to their facilitator about what happened in that call.
Uh-huh.
And the other shift that we've done is really for people to use this reflective listening program as a way to keep practice commitments. So there are a couple of practice commitments that will be sent to people, and they're making that commitment to practice that way in reflective listening, and they watch what arises in keeping those commitments during the quarter.
Uh-huh.
So for example, sorry, go ahead, Jen.
Oh no, please. Yep.
So, for example, instead of saying that, you know, the rule is that 5 minutes, if you're late for a call, it means that you have to be on time equals being 5 minutes late for the call or whatever the guideline is,
right,
to making the commitment that you'll never be late for the call.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
Right? And so if that's the commitment that you're making, how do you make sure you keep that commitment? And in the process of making that commitment, see what arises that you can drop.
That's so perfect, because that's what we always talk about in practice. Is what's so powerful about making a commitment is that I run up against everything that egocentric karmic conditioning puts in the way of me not keeping that commitment.
That's correct. And if there was a policy that says, well, let's discuss what is actually being late for the call,
mm-hmm.
the focus becomes on the content of it, not on the process of it. And what we're encouraging people to do is to take ownership of their practice.
Mm-hmm.
And
which
taking
really
ownership
what,
of, yeah,
yeah,
go ahead, sorry, good.
It's what the whole year of deepening practice is about. So you really have brought this program in alignment with that paradigm of how to practice.
That's correct. And I think the principles there are, you know, how do I take ownership of my practice? How do I use everything how do I use everything in my experience to see how I cause myself to suffer and drop that?
Mm-hmm.
And how do we help, how do we make sure that people feel supported, cared for, have the ability to ask the questions when they're practicing so sincerely? How do we help them?
Yeah.
And that's how the structure has changed, as well as the structure of the program has changed.
Yeah. So really adding in a lot more support, a lot more, sounds like, individual-based support.
Yes, and I think that we've always tried to provide that support with, you know, whoever's been administering the program, but if we want to deepen that support and have people send in what they're seeing or answer people not on content level, on a content level, but on a process level in what's coming up for them in the program, then we actually need more facilitators to support the participants. And that's what we've done. We've invited senior practitioners to step in and steward other people's practice and have the opportunity to deepen their own practice in the process.
Right, exactly. So we're running a bit short on time, and I do want to give people a sense of, so let's say we have a quarter open now. I think it starts April 15th, and if I'm not mistaken, the deadline to register is the 25th of March, I think?
That's correct.
So if a person is interested in the program, what sort of happens? You sign up, and then what?
You sign up, and you'll be sent a confirmation, and I believe you required to attend a training call. The training call is mandatory.
So you don't have to know how to do reflective listening. You'll be taught that if that's not a skill you already have.
That's correct. Then part of the training call will be to train on reflective listening. And we always try to be mindful of how we do the pairing so that people who are brand new to the call or to the reflective listening practice are paired with people who are, you know, have done this before and can assist the other person if it's their first time.
Great. Okay.
So you do
yeah.
the training call, and part of the training call email will contain a list of commitments that you're making in the program, and you're requested to send back an email that says you will confirm and that you will attempt to keep all of these commitments during your quarter.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've attended the training call and if you sent us back your commitment, then you'll be paired with a buddy and you'll receive your buddy's email address. And then you're required to set up a time for the call. And then the quarter starts and you call your buddy every week. And at the end of the quarter, we've asked people to send us a report on how they did keeping their commitments and what they saw during the process of the program.
Oh, very good. And so the calls themselves, so if I have a buddy, then once a week, either I call my buddy or my buddy calls me, and we just reflect. So for 15 minutes, I get to talk about whatever I'm seeing in practice, and my buddy will just simply reflect me. And so it's a really safe place to just talk about anything. No one's going to project anything onto me or ask anything of me. They'll just simply reflect, and then after 15 minutes, we switch roles. So that person, my buddy, will get to talk about whatever they're seeing, and I get to practice my reflective listening.
That's right. And I think the cool thing about that practice is not only do you develop the skills to reflect, but basically what you're giving is a gift of your presence.
Yeah.
And so, you know, you can only reflect if you're 100% present.
Yeah.
And so that's the that's the other practice skill that's happening at that time, which is to be completely present in a place of non-separation and offer that to the person who is sharing at that time.
Yeah. You know, I've heard so many people over the years talk about one of the things that's so powerful about reflective listening buddies is, you know, they're going along. They could be doing anything. Maybe they're at work or whatever, in the middle of just a, you know, big, I can't stand this, I don't like this, I don't whatever, but it's time for the call, and just watch themselves completely drop it all and be present for the call. And what that proves to us is, wow, I can do it. No matter what's going on, I can be willing to drop all of it and just get here for at least these 30 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the things that I've noticed when about reflection, at least, is that reflection is to have ego get out of the interaction, because the only way you can do that is that there's no identity operating.
Yeah. And that's the core of what we're all practicing. So it's really a great gift to have those minutes set aside where, if all else fails in the day, those are going to be minutes where I'm going to be practicing that.
Yeah, and hopefully there's no voices of karmic conditioning hanging around at that time. And if there is, there's a safe and judgmental, non-judgmental place to drop it.
Yes, exactly. And then there are the support calls that you're talking about that happen throughout the quarter, where, and it sounds like, you know, emailing in to the whoever their assigned facilitator is to kind of look at some of those processes that happen around the edges. You know, maybe the self-hate that happens after the call about how I did, you know, assessing my skill and that sort of thing.
Or I didn't keep my commitment, and I'm really getting a beating, and what do I do about that, and how do I move forward from there, right?
Yeah. Well, it's really, really fun that we've done this overhaul, you know, to bring it in line with this whole year of deepening practice, yet another great opportunity for people to really participate and strengthen practice. So thanks for being with us, Ashwini, to talk about it, and thanks for all your hard work on recreating the program.
Well, I didn't do it by myself. There was a bunch of people who were responsible, Rebecca and Alex, and now our art facilitators who will be actually who will be supporting everyone in the quarter.
It's always a team effort, isn't it?
It's always a Sangha effort.
Yeah, always a Sangha effort. All right, well, thanks so much, Ashwini.
Thanks, Jen.
Good night.
Good night.
All right, Michael, we'll turn it over to you.
Okay, great. Thank you, Jen. Thank you, Ashwini. Good afternoon, and welcome to Open Air. It's my pleasure to be joined tonight by Justin, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Welcome, Justin.
Hey, Michael.
Great to hear your voice.
Thank you. Likewise. Fun to be here.
Great. I was really excited to hear about reflective listening buddies. That was fun.
I was too. It's amazing kind of what happens. It was happening with that. Two things occurred to me as I was listening. One is, just to underline what an amazing opportunity that program is. You know, it's been going on, as Jen said, for years, and people have, since the beginning, have talked about it kind of as a lifeline out there in the world to practice, and kind of what a powerful effect it has. And now with the work that Ashwini and her team have done, you know, what I heard in it is the opportunity is basically quadrupled or somewhere around there.
Yes.
It's really pretty remarkable. And the other thing I was noticing is, you know, that conversation that just happened, to me, is a perfect snapshot of what's going on in practice right now. You know, a lot of it's being spearheaded by Ashwini and her genius and her what she's been sort of teaching all of us, you know, kind of how to look to see, you know, what's the principle behind this? Why are we doing what we're doing? How do we want to do what we're doing? You know, what is the kind of the guiding spiritual point of view that we want to be bringing to whatever the content is? In this case, is reflective listening buddies, and then how to apply that throughout all of the details so that it all represents the practice that we do. And it's been very educational, not to mention inspiring, to kind of watch that happen. You know, the image that I've been having of it is it's kind of like if you have a really wrinkly shirt, and then you a nice hot iron, and you can just, you know, when you iron it, you just smooth out all the wrinkles. So there's nothing wrong with the shirt. It just needs it needs to be kind of straightened out. And I feel like that's what all of us have been doing as a group and with under Ashwini's leadership, is we're just kind of straightening all these, ironing all these things out. And the result, as is obvious in the Reflective Listening Buddies, is, you know, a deepening practice.
Yes, yes. It's very beautiful.
It is. It's kind of like, you know, we're all deepening practice as individuals in our own practice, and then at the same time, the organization itself, you might say, or practice itself is deepening practice in how we do what we do in practice. So it's happening sort of at all the levels. I hadn't really seen that before, actually, until they were talking. I just find that really interesting and like you say, really a beautiful, kind of a beautiful manifestation of practice itself.
Yes, yes. I had a sense as they were talking of kind of multiple searchlights being added onto conditioning.
Uh-huh.
To kind of really, you know, we're going to see this from every angle and it's not going to get away, and quite amazing.
Yeah, it's interesting you'd say that because that's in my experience big time with everything that's been going on. You know, typically in monastic life, there isn't a whole lot of wiggle room anyway. But, you know, there is this little place where you can wiggle around. And just from everything to, because the process that, you know, they were just embodying and I was just talking about is being applied to every single thing about practice, about the monastery, down to the tiniest little detail. And like you say, the wiggle room for conditioning is being taken out of every single thing, kind of one piece at a time in a way, but with this orienting principle that is guiding all of that just is lining everything up according to how we want practice to be. And
yeah.
It's gotten squeaky clean all over the place.
Yes, yes. Great. Justin, I have a few announcements here.
Okay, super.
This Saturday, March 10th, is an at-home retreat, and this is a day of guided practice with the monks and Sangha, and the deadline for that is tomorrow, March 7th, to register.
Another one, a lot like the Reflective Listening Buddies, not to be missed, a great way to get support at home.
Yes. And then there's a new month-long email class with Sherry entitled Resistance in the Spirit of Inquiry, and that starts on March 16th. And the deadline is March 13th. Sign up for that.
Great.
Finally, Reflective Listening Buddies, which we just heard about. Registration is now open for the quarter that begins on April 15th.
Sign up now.
And I'd like to remind our callers to focus on one topic, please, in about 5 minutes.
Okay, great. Thanks, Michael.
Okay. First caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, it's Zoe.
Hey, Zoe.
How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty good. I'm really glad that Reflective Listening Buddies is open because I've really missed that. So.
Yeah, you're not the only one. We've been hearing from people. Yeah, it's amazing how helpful it is to have something like that just embedded in your week, isn't it, to bring you back?
It's so helpful. It is. It really is.
So what's going on?
Well, you know, I wanted to talk about commitment, which seems very appropriate.
Mm-hmm.
I was looking at commitment, and I actually found a really great archive when you were talking about it with somebody a long time ago, and we were talking about getting to the place where it doesn't matter. I think the example that you guys were talking about was a clean bathroom and getting to the place where it doesn't matter if the bathroom is clean.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I get caught. Okay, so I really want my commitment to be successful. You know what I mean?
Yes.
And that's sort of, like, I can see how that can kind of, like, get in the way of actually being successful.
Yeah. Let me see if I'm with you. So your heart, I imagine, are you talking about a commitment to practice?
Or yeah.
Okay, it's a commitment to practice. It actually wouldn't matter. It could be commitment to anything, but because it would work the same. But so your heart, let's say, wants to make a commitment to practice or increase a commitment to practice or something like that? Mm-hmm. And then, so then as conditioning is always going to do, it has a way of attempting to take that away from you where in a way that you can't see it. So it might be like now, you know, I need to make this commitment and have to look a certain way, for example, or something like that. And it kind of takes that pure impulse towards that commitment and turns it into something conditional that it can tangle you up in. Is it something like that?
Yeah, I noticed like an insight sort of dropped in around it when I looked at like when I first started practicing that first 6 months and why it was so successful, because it sort of didn't matter either way.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, because it was just sort of an experiment. I wasn't invested in it, you know, it was just something I was trying out. And then, you know, like the same thing, like, you know, like, yeah, I get like, oh, well, now I'm in bed. This is something that I really want to do. And so, yeah, I'm still looking at that getting tangled up with conditioning. So.
Yeah, and seeing how that's working, aren't you? So that's the clean bathroom thing. So in the beginning, probably a couple things were going on. One is you had no idea what it was all about because you just started, so you just kind of enter this thing. It's kind of like you a lot of times will catch conditioning off guard with something like that because it hasn't had time to learn the language and kind of figure out how to use it in a way that will work for it. So there's like, you know, people will often talk about that as the honeymoon period. You know, so you discover practice, conditioning is completely caught off guard. For a little while, it's trying to pull itself together. In the meantime, you really have these experiences of expansion and so on. And also, because you hadn't had a chance to really get involved with conditioning about it, you didn't really care. It was just a great big experiment. But gradually, conditioning's had a way to kind of come in there and make it matter, make different parts of it matter, make things seem real, like on a kind of a content level that weren't really real before. You were just kind of in this big flow. You don't know where you're going, and you're just going there.
And I feel like I'm identified so much of the time that it's like, it's just really, I mean, I'm still practicing and I'm still seeing stuff and like it's still good, but I never really get to see the nitty gritty of how the stuff goes on because I'm already kind of unconscious or something like that. I don't know. And then I get caught noodling it and I'm just like, okay, well, this I know like probably isn't helpful, you know, I'm just sitting here thinking. No,
well, have you considered that perhaps maybe all of that is practice?
Yeah. I mean, I've thought about, well, maybe this is just something I have to go through, kind of.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, it'd be interesting to be able to kind of tap into everybody right now and find out. But I bet you there's almost nobody, maybe nobody out there who has ever had the experience of just going into practice and just kind of cruising through.
Yeah.
You know, what at least, and this is my experience too, you know, what practice is getting tangled up with conditioning and then seeing our way out of it, then get tangled up again and seeing our way out of it, and on and on and on and on and on like that.
Uh-huh.
Because that's how we get free of it. And in a way, you know, what you're saying is a perfect example of that. So you have seen this process that conditioning is doing of making things matter, that takes you out of that expansive place that you found in the beginning with practice. So you've seen that. That's a very helpful thing to have seen.
Yeah.
You see what I mean?
I think so.
Yeah.
I'll listen to this again.
What's that?
I said I'll listen to this again and hopefully like more of what you're saying will sink in. But
yeah.
I know what you're saying.
A lot of times, you know, we tend to idealize, or we might say conditioning tends to idealize, you know, a life or a practice even that's really, really easy, where it shouldn't be like that. You know, it shouldn't be that we're up to our eyeballs in conditioning. You know, that's not what practice is all about. But at least in my experience, that is a lot of what practice is all about. And it's about seeing through that, letting go, having these experiences of expansion where we connect with what's possible. You know, it's all a part of it. But slogging through and seeing what conditioning is, how it can cause us to suffer, is a big, big, big piece of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. Just keep kind of, I mean, I'm signing up for everything that I can.
Great.
And I think.
One other thing you might
take. Go ahead. Yeah.
No, go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just, I think it's like, you know, there are things that I think, like, practice should look like. I think you said that, like, you know, this sort of, I feel like I'm like a little bit scattered or not hit or miss, you know, not as like I'm still kind of struggling for this like commitment of like every day, everything kind of really solidly in my everyday schedule. And it, you know what I mean? And things are kind of like all up in the air in my life right now. And so,
So that adds to the chaos probably.
Yeah, it's sort of all chaotic, and you know, my schedule's changing and all this. So, but what were you going to say?
Well, a couple of things. One is, to me, the commitment is not to a state of mind or like, or not to an experience. It's this is just my point of view. The commitment is to the form of practice. Like you say, you're signing up for everything. Great. You know, if you can establish a meditation, daily meditation practice. I don't know if you're doing that, but you know, no matter how small or simple it is, to have that there, to have, you know, like reflective listening buddies, like we were just talking about. We've got this email class coming up. You know, all of those things are the form of practice that, you know, the practice and the guide give us to participate in. And to me, that what I find helpful and relaxing in situations like this, which is kind of the way it always is that I can just give myself over to those, to participate in those things, and trust that if I will just not quit, then I eventually, what my heart wants will be what I have. You know, I'll win, in other words. So if I just follow the form, then the magic will happen. And while I follow the form, all kinds of stuff is going to go on. You know, sometimes it'll be wonderful. Sometimes it's going to be pretty darn awful, as conditioning is reacting to the changes that are happening, the possibilities that are opening up. A lot of times I won't even be able to see that there are possibilities opening up or that there's changing happenings because I'll be so involved in conditioning. But that's all a part of it. But if I'm participating and taking advantage of the support that's there, only one of us can win, and it's the being. It's not conditioning, just because, you know, we can't outlast that kind of commitment.
It was really nice to talk to you.
Nice to talk to you, too. Thanks so much for calling in. Good luck.
Thank you.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.
Thanks for joining us, Zoe. You're listening to Open Air. Dave, we have another caller.
All right, great.
Next caller, you are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Justin. Hi, Michael. It's Virginia.
Hey, Virginia.
Hi. I am calling tonight as part of my monthly commitment to call.
Good for you.
Yeah. And I guess what I've been noticing is that the same process that is used to try and convince me not to call, it's like the same process that is always talking me out of stuff.
Yeah.
So,
and is it always stuff that's good for you, takes care of you, expands you?
Fun.
Fun.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, so we know what's behind that, yeah?
Exactly. So it was kind of neat to see because, you know, as I was, you know, getting ready, well, you know, earlier in the day I made the plan. Well, I mean, I had the plan to call, but then the voices came in and tried to talk me out of calling, and in a very familiar way. And at first, or sometimes, it seems believable. And what's interesting is that then sometimes, so it seems believable, and then if something happens and I disidentify for even just for a moment, and it's like I get all of a sudden I'm behind it. You know,
yeah.
I get behind this action, this thing that I'm going to do, and it just, there's a lot of energy, and it's just, I don't know. It's just a different, it's just all those energies behind it.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Well, you get to see what's going on, don't you? And you get to actually, it's actually bigger than that because, you know, use that word disidentify, you know, so I just explain that to anybody who might not be familiar with that word, you know, so you're identified in some, like in that resistance, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And then, so like you say, you believe that it's true.
Mm-hmm.
So what's going on there is the voices are talking to you, telling you a story maybe about how you don't want to call, you don't really need to, or, you know, who cares anyway, or there's better things to do, or whatever it might be.
Well, I'm sleepy. I'm sorry. I don't feel that good. You know, really, literally.
Whatever you'll believe.
Yep.
And then because you're paying attention, and also because you've made this commitment to call, which sort of provides a mirror for you, you're paying attention to it. And like we're saying with the previous caller, you know, that identification can only hold up for so long to scrutiny.
Right.
So you're paying attention to it, and then suddenly that magical thing happens where you're not it anymore. A moment ago you were it, completely believed it was true. Now suddenly you're not it. You can see it's not true, that it's coming from conditioning, and you're actually in a completely different place than you were before. You can almost say a different world.
Right.
And you can really tell by that energy, can't you? You know, all that energy that was involved in that resistance, now suddenly it's freed up. It's energy that you're experiencing as you and as the life that's moving through you that you can put towards the thing that you really care about, that your heart is wanting.
Yes, exactly. That's exactly what it is, Dave. And just this whole thing of, I don't know if I can even express it, but, you know, I think I've shared about this before, the difficulty or the resistance to participate, you know, and the conditioned beliefs about needing to stay invisible or in the background or all that stuff. And where am I going with this? Well, just as there is conditioned mind trying to convince me of that, there's all this other, it's like heart is on the other side of that, and wants to do it, I don't want to set it up as a confrontation, but it's just like once it's clear, once I get unidentified and it's clear, the heart just, it just leaps forward. I mean, just it more than anything wants to disprove or be disidentified from that, you know?
Yeah. It's almost like it happens automatically at that point, isn't it?
Yeah, life
takes over and you just go. And you're not even, it's not even like you have to make a decision to do it. That's my experience anyway. Probably yours too. You know, that this disidentification happens, you basically move from this unreal world, you know, this illusion that is getting cast on top of the circumstances that are there and, you know, everything that you're sensing and all of that. Moving to what, I mean, I don't know if we could really say it's real, but because that doesn't really mean anything, but it's as real as anything is. You know, you move to basically to an alignment with life and a participation in the energy of life, and then, you know, life is going someplace. You know, it's not just kind of dawdling around and moving around in circles. It's going someplace all the time.
Yeah.
So you disidentify. It's like, you know, people often use an image of like a river, you know, and the water flowing in the river. You get out in that current. There's only one direction you can go. And, you know, what we find out through practice, of course, is where life is going is where we want to go. Because it's heading towards what takes care of us, what opens us up, what brings love and joy and connection and fun and everything else like that we want into our lives.
Yeah, that's exactly it, Justin, that being aligned with life. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And it really, just to tie it in with that previous conversation, you know, and it's such a good example of the way commitment works, I think, what you're saying. Because without that commitment to make the call, you have no background against which to see this process happening.
Right.
You know, you haven't said, because to make a commitment like that is to basically say, conditioning, I am challenging you to take this away from me.
Right.
Because it will. It has to. It has to try to do that because it can't just let you do things that expand you.
Yeah,
but you say, I'm drawing this line, okay, in the sand here. Okay. I dare you to cross the line, and it always will, and sometimes it'll win, like we were talking about before. Sometimes it won't, but either way, if we're paying attention, we get to see what it does.
Right. Yeah. And in seeing that, what it does, it's, it's applicable to the other the other situations that come up, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep.
It's always seems to be a familiar process.
Yep.
Or like you said, the trap is laid with the things that I'll fall for.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, and it's always trying to accomplish just one thing,
yes.
Which is to get you out of the moment.
Right.
That's it. And you know, it can look like it's trying to do that in 10,000 different ways, but it really isn't. It's just trying to distract you, saying,
yeah.
You say, over here.
Yes.
And we are trained to go there, but just to see that's really all it's ever doing,
yes.
Then that gives us the power to say, no thanks.
Yep, yep.
To know that when that's happening, that's what's happening, instead of something real that we need to follow and get lost in.
Yes, so we know that it's that's what's happening is conditioned mind is trying to distract me,
mm-hmm.
rather than the content of whatever it may be.
Yep, and we have to support ourselves with a commitment in order mm-hmm. to make it possible to see it. Because if, like, we have no commitment to practice, we have nothing that is going to interfere with conditioning's ability to do what it does. We're just going to go along with the program and not realize we're going along with the program. But we
right.
say, okay, you know, I would like to, you know, this is happening right now with the deepening practice action plan
mm-hmm.
that was talked about in the last couple of radio shows,
mm-hmm.
and that's a big part of practice right now. Okay, I'm going to really like to go on this retreat in this
mm-hmm.
summer, and I really want to do reflective listening buddies practice, and I really like to do this email class, and just kind of setting it up so that there's a structure there throughout life and throughout the year, in this case, that's going to put that mirror up that'll give me a chance to see what conditioning is doing, and then even more important than that, you know, as Sherry has been talking about, what lights me up? What do I want instead?
Right.
You know, what's the life that I get when I'm not believing that story and heading off in these illusory places, but just staying here with me and my heart.
Right, yeah, yeah, absolutely. And, you know, the thing, one of the things that I really appreciate about this, our deepening practice for 2012 is that on my own, I can make commitments and keep them or not keep them, but it seems harder to keep them without support. So
yeah, absolutely.
The support is really... It lights me up just to talk about it because, I think it's just fabulous. It's going to be a huge boost.
Yeah, I think so
too. My practice, yeah.
Without support, it's just you and conditioning.
Exactly.
And conditioning's
going
to win those, you know, most
right.
likely. But if
right.
it's you and Sangha
yeah.
against conditioning, then you're going to win. You're going to win a lot of them.
That's what I'm banking on. I'm betting on that, actually.
Yeah.
So.
And then the fun thing is that, you know, you've kind of said this in this conversation, but even when you lose, you win.
Right.
Because you
right.
lose, you know, that's my favorite thing, actually. You know, okay, conditioning, well, you got me that time.
Mm-hmm.
You really just got me that time. But I saw you do it.
Yeah.
So good luck
yeah.
next time.
Yep.
You may get me next time, too, but then I'm going to see it again. And sooner or later, you're not going to be able to get me on that one.
Right. And what you're describing, yeah, we can go on. But what you're describing to me too is that I caught you and I see it, and I'm going to be compassionate with myself and grateful
mm-hmm.
that I saw it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, that's such a good point. Yeah.
Yeah.
That did it. Ends in gratitude.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Thank you for showing me that. That was a
yeah.
great gift. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Even when it's painful.
Yeah. Yep. Well, okay, Justin, I'm gonna. Let you go.
Okay, thanks.
Person.
That was really fun, Virginia. Thanks for calling
yeah.
in.
Yeah, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for joining us, Virginia. You're listening to Open Air. Today we have the special privilege of being joined by Justin, who's a monk at the Zen Monastery Peace Center. Justin, we're going to have a break here, and then we'll be right back.
Okay, great.
You are the light of the world. You are the light.
This beautiful song by Trish Bruxford Colligan invites us to celebrate the unique light each of us brings to the world. Simply Celebrate wants to support you in living into that light, no matter where you are on the path, but especially when it's a little hard to see in the dark. With great gratitude to Sherry Huber and this amazing Sangha, Simply Celebrate uses the practice as a foundation for everything we do. We offer coaching, books, and self-mentoring programs to help you find more joy, color, spontaneity, and connection, moment to moment. Visit simplycelebrate.net and turn ordinary days into an extraordinary life.
This is Scott from Porch Dog Software. Today we're talking with Lanny, one of Porch Dog's favorite clients. Lanny, what do you think open air listeners might want to know about working with Porch Dog?
Well, Scott, I think they might want to know that you write all kinds of software for Macs and iPhones and iPads and for all types of companies, big ones and small ones like mine. And you do your work with a lot of enthusiasm.
Yeah. You know, one of the things we love about open air is the energy and enthusiasm in every show. We try and get lit up about everything we do here at Porch Dog Software, too.
Everything?
Yep. Especially the things we don't like.
Sweet.
Check us out at www.porchdogsoft.com. We look forward to hearing from you soon.
Welcome back to Open Air. Justin, we have another caller.
Okay, thanks, Michael.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself? Next caller, are you there? Okay, moving on. Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hello?
Hello?
Hi, this is Jim Dodge calling in. I got an email from Michael to call in at this time and with a couple of questions that I had.
Oh, okay, great. Excellent. I'm so glad you got on. Welcome, Jim.
Oh, thank you. I've read a couple of Sherry's books, and I'm not really new to meditation, but I'm new to her teachings, and I signed up for the email course, and as I'm hearing you talk to the other callers, I realized that, you know, I'm not real familiar with, you know, the machinations or processes of conditioning. Like a lot of times when I don't follow through with a commitment, it's just because it just feels like a general lazy feeling, like I just don't feel like getting out of bed or something like that. So I'm not really sure, like, you know, I've journaled about it because I'm making a change for good. I'm doing that 30-day guided retreat.
And oh, great.
You know, if you did or didn't follow the commitment, why? And sometimes I can't come up with really good reasons around that. But one of my questions kind of has to do with one of the things that I really getting a lot out of these books, and it kind of takes a meditation practice that I felt like kind of stalled, and just all it did was kind of get me into a calm place and maybe a centered place, but I didn't really understand all this stuff about conditioning. And one of the things that I'm having a hard time kind of buying into is, or maybe conditioning is kind of using against me, is when I do meditate, I'm mindful even in the way I pick up my toothbrush, and things feel centered and not chaotic, and I dress better, and I see other people that are attractive and that I'm attracted to, especially ones that look very well put together. And I really, you know, in the way that you're kind of attracted to people, I not just sort of want to be with them, but almost like some kind of stupid lifestyle thing where somebody wants like a nice car or something. I think, oh, my life would be great if I was on that level of that person and put together that way. But, you know, I look at my own life and how good I felt when I do feel put together. And then I look at, you know, somebody who's maybe going through like a homeless person on the street, not recently homeless, but long time homeless. And they smell really bad. And I could tell conditioning that like they mumble to themselves and they're full of hate. And it doesn't seem like a very fun life. And then that sends me into this cycle of, you know, I don't do the thing that that would be expansive for me, and I think less of myself, and I'm not on the level of those cool, attractive people, and, you know, my self-esteem, I feel like the lower my self-esteem goes, the more apt I am to get triggered at work, and I get triggered a lot at work, and a lot of those people are people who are doing very well at work, and some of those attractive people, and they're just cutting a wide swath to success, and that kind of fulfills some of those beliefs, and it makes me isolate even more, and kind of makes me ruminate, you know, and I can't really tell any. Some of those people are my peers, or they're above me, and they're just talking about how great their life is, and so they love like all the things that their ego is telling them. And
so, Jim, let me ask you something about this. So, what this practice that you're kind of beginning to explore offers, I think, is in addition to, I think what most meditation practices offer, as you say, is a way to get calm, get still, being able to, you know, relax and that kind of thing, which is all really good and, you know, a really good part of meditation. What it feels like this practice offers is the tools to take what is going on in the mind and to break it down in a way that we can see the processes that are happening that in there that we don't that we're not aware of that cause us to suffer. So as you're speaking, what it sounds to me like you're speaking sort of from within the world that you live inside of. Yeah?
Yeah.
That world of comparison, of, you know, you're looking at you're looking at these other people, you're having conversations about, you know, kind of what's attractive, what's not attractive, where you are in relationship to the other people, like that. And
totally.
So there's all that. What's that?
Yeah, no, totally. I'm totally agreeing with you. Yeah.
So what, as you get involved with this practice, I think what you'll find is that you will begin to acquire some tools that will assist you in taking all that stuff, which I think for all of us at the beginning, it's just this bunch of gobbledygook. It's like a bowl of spaghetti. It's just, you know, it's just going all over the place, and we can't see what's what and how things are connected. And basically, we can't see how this thing that we talk about is conditioning or a conditioned mind is doing what it's doing in order to make us unhappy. We can see that we're unhappy. We just can't see how it's being done to us. I think what you'll find is you'll acquire the tools that will allow you to gradually take all that stuff apart and see how conditioned mind does what it does to make you unhappy. For example, the comparison. I mean, that's just a classic way. I mean, if condition can get us comparing ourselves to others, then, you know, just right there, it's got us in a suffering place like that.
Okay. I guess that's the one part where I can see a lot of that's the one thing that I've kind of got a hang up on is, like, you know, Zen appreciates orderliness, and then there's particularly a guy at work, and our lives are very, very similar, and we're peers, and we're getting paid to do a job that's performance based, and, you know, he's just doing better, and so I guess, you know.
So I think if I understand what you're saying here, I think you're actually conditioning has got you talking about two different things, thinking they're the same. So see if this resonates with you. As you sit and as you discover sort of how to be with yourself and how to take care of yourself, what you find is there's a lot of ways to say it, but here's just one. A way that the life within you expresses is in order and in taking care of yourself and those kinds of things. And that feels good because it's an expression of the life within you. Would you agree with me so far?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's one thing. Now, I think what's happened, you'll have to look and see, because I can only project onto your experience based on mine. You'll have to look and see for yourself if it's a so. But what it sounds like you're saying is, conditioning is taking that which comes from, you know, within you, within your heart, and is turning it into something that's conditional, through that process of comparison. And in that is basically taking away from you that with that which is true for you.
Oh, I think I caught a because I just hear like conditioning, and it almost becomes this scientific label. But I've never thought of it as like you know, karma, egocentric karmic conditioning. I've never thought of it as that is something that is conditional. Like you say, like, you know, I'm okay as long as I meet XYZ condition.
Right.
And that's where, like, the conditioning.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
That's why we call it conditioning. And so in order for conditioning to have access to you, and what I mean by that is, you know, if you're just being you, if you're just here in the moment, then conditioning has no access to you. There's no good and bad. There's no right and wrong. There's no comparison happening. There's nothing to feel bad about. None of that. You're just here. And kind of like, you know, the trees or the birds or, you know, they're just here expressing the form of life that they're expressing.
Uh-huh.
Yeah? So, and that's the same for us. For a human being, it's exactly the same. The thing is that almost no human being can live from that place because we have this conditioning that is that has a way of pulling us out of the moment into these into a dualistic world, like that comparison. You know, you're better than or less than the people that you're running that you're seeing, you're running into. You know, that world if it can get you out there, then it's got you in a world where you're going to suffer instead of just experience your inherent goodness and the joy that comes from being here. And there's a lot of ways to kind of sense that what you're experiencing is conditioning rather than, you know, what's here. One, the easiest one is if you're unhappy, you can know you're in conditioning in some form. And so, you know, whenever I realize, God, I am miserable, then I know, okay, well, I'm going to look around and see, how is this happening? How is this being done to me? Generally, in conditioning, you know, like you said, it's conditional. There's a standard that I have to meet. And generally, I'm going to end up a failure no matter how hard I try. There's good and bad, right and wrong. There's you know, urgency. All that stuff is out here in conditioning land and is not here in the moment where we are.
Okay. That helps a lot because there's times when I'm not even thinking about being mindful and I'm not even thinking whether I'm unhappy or not unhappy. I'm not even thinking about, you know, me. I'm just whatever. I might be working even and, you know, and doing that thing that I use to compare, but I'm not even using it to compare. And then there's other times when, you know, I'll find myself getting triggered by something and, you know, it helps to sort of disidentify and focus on my breathing like that, like the number that Michael gave me. and I'm using this totally as an example, not blaming or anything like that, but it didn't work. And it said, you know, this number doesn't work or it's in use by someone else. And then other people got on the call and I found myself getting triggered. Then you told Zoe, you know, that's an opportunity for you to kind of disidentify.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, oh, I'm triggered right now. I can practice right now. And so I started just focusing on my breathing and concentrating on my field of awareness, and it helped. I could see, like, oh, my gosh, I'm so wrapped up in this. I'm so wrapped up in, like, I should be on the call and talking. And
that's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That is practice in a nutshell right there. That's exactly it. And the more that you do, you'll do that. And I'm sure you've had this experience already with your meditation practice. It's just that, at least, you know, from this point of view anyway, you know, the kind of the psychological language and the tools that we use in our practice, it shortens the way between here where most people start off and a place of freedom from conditioning. So I think what you'll find is the more you'll do that, the more you'll see how it does it. Like you saw a lot tonight about how it pulls you out of the moment, how it pulls you into a story. And you'll just keep doing that over and over and over and over again. And especially with that attitude of mind that says, okay, I'm triggered, here's an opportunity. I mean, that's an attitude of mind that basically, you know, we just can't lose if that's the way we're approaching things. And just gradually we'll see more and more how it does what it does, and we'll become freer and freer and happier people.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Justin. I really appreciate you doing this service and taking my call.
Oh, you're quite welcome, and thank you, because, you know, it takes all of us.
Okay. All right. All right.
Great.
Well,
take care. Have a great evening.
You too. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Jim. You're listening to Open Air. Justin, we have another caller.
Okie dokie.
Next caller, you are now live on the air, and would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Pasha.
Hey, Pasha.
Hi, Justin. Hi, Michael.
Hi.
How are you doing?
Very good. How are you?
I'm good.
Uh-huh. Well, I just lost my breath being unmuted on the line.
Yeah, it just sucks the wind right out of a person, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So what's going on?
Well, I called last time about the issue I have with my work, with my job, I was able to practice of being the happiest and best employee.
And how did that go?
And it was actually a lot of fun.
I bet.
Yeah, it's a place I find myself while I hear a lot of voices at the same time saying, well, that's not real,
of course,
you know, and criticizing me and so on. Same time, I find myself in some kind of place where I'm just going, you know, I'm going and I'm going to unknown. I really don't know what's happening kind of at work, at the bigger picture, but in a place where I find myself, everything is fine, you know. It's and that circle of happiness, you know, it kind of expands, and I find, to my surprise or to surprise of somebody who is kind of non-believing it.
Who would have thought it could be so simple, huh?
You just
decide. What I hear you saying is, you just decided you're going to be happy, and you were.
Yes. Yes.
That's just all there was to it.
Yeah, and also the second part of being a best employee, it's while conditioning would take me into a place where I don't know how, and you know, what should I do, and you know, I can't do until I find out what's the best thing I should do. You know, I'm just going with what I have and what I know, and yeah, it felt sometimes like I'm on a boat, and I don't know, like the rest of the ocean, but I'm here, I'm on my boat, and you know, I can pedal my pedals, you know.
Yeah, it's not particularly important to know what the rest of the ocean looks like, does it? As long as you know how to, as long as you keep on paddling your boat, that's your whole responsibility right there. That's all you have to bring to it.
Yes, yes. And then I start to notice, like, you know, kind of magical things happening, you know, with people around me, and, you know, things that didn't work out before start to work out. Somehow, still unknowingly to me, by you know how it came about, and also just a kind of that happiness that conditioning would accuse me of kind of faking it.
Of course,
it expands and it kind of comes back, and it's. It's kind of like an engine, you know. It's kind of that energy kind of energizes me.
Yeah, well, it's really, it's who you are, isn't it?
Mm.
I mean, it's not fake at all. It's quite the opposite.
Yeah, it's hard to get through the voices, to hear and understand it. But at the same time, I can clearly see it's working.
Yeah, it's true. That's what we were talking about earlier in the show. It is hard to get past the voices to get there. It takes a lot of practice. You know, that
mm-hmm.
little joke I made a little while ago that, you know, you just decided you were going to be happy, and you were. You know, in a way you could say, well, that's all there is to it. But in a way you could say, well, yes, and in order to have the power to do that, somebody has to have a really sincere practice of awareness. Because without a lot of awareness, the voices, as you say, are going to be there talking us out of what is just natural to us. You know, that happiness that's just who we are is going to be talking us into this other place where we will suffer. But if we've got a practice of awareness, and we have a really good chance of getting out of that conditioned world and getting back here where we are, and finding out that this is who I am. You know, this is what life is when I'm not involved with conditioned mind.
Yes, and it's and still I find sometimes, you know, caught up in conditioning and kind of deep in a misery and troubles, and I still know, I still come back to a place which While I'm kind of in a dark room, part of me believes into, I have to engage in the conversation with the voices because my survival depends on it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a kind of high stake situation about my job and so on.
That's what it looks like from inside the dark room, you're saying.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
There is someone who goes into belief and abandon the practice because, well, we have to attend this urgent emergency.
Mm-hmm. This is
about,
real, for crying out loud. We can't practice with this. We gotta make something happen.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and then coming out of there and seeing how it's not true, and I made a few recordings, and it's still taking a listening of them multiple times, and have multiple recordings even about the same topic,
mm-hmm.
to get to the person who is in that belief of solving emergencies first, and then
mm-hmm.
coming down to practice.
Yep, you're really practicing with that. What I hear you saying is you're practicing being lit up.
Yes.
And
you,
it's kind of like the commitment we were talking about earlier. That's as you are practicing that, you know, conditioning is reacting and is trying to do what it always does. The voices are trying to talk you out of that. But because what you're practicing is being lit up, or however you want to say that to yourself, being happy, even being the best employee, then...
Yeah.
Whenever conditioning comes to try to take it away from you, then you're there practicing awareness with that. And so it's kind of like you win twice with the same action. You get to be lit up, at least some of the time, and you also get to see how to be lit up in a way that you can apply, you know, for the rest of your life.
Yes, and I see recently, besides the person who has a belief into like emergency situations, I also see maybe it's a new voice, or maybe it's a voice I just start to notice, the voice of not enough,
mm-hmm.
the voice of and I'm getting double criticized for that, because somebody will call me greedy for like having that voice.
Uh-huh.
So there is a lot of kind of aversion for not to look about, you know, not to see that voice, because it's hiding behind
self-hate.
Yes, the judgment of being greedy.
Right, and that's just the next layer, isn't it? it goes back to what we were saying earlier. It's that, at least in my experience, that's a lot of what practice is. You know, we're practicing with what's going on now. You know, here's how conditioning is doing what it does in order to pull me out of the moment and cause me to suffer. And then, you know, I'm practicing with that. I'm paying attention to that. You know, I'm applying those tools. I'm looking to see, like you're saying, you know, what are the voices saying? What am I believing that's not true? What am I projecting? You know, what part of me is here? All those kind of things that we do to try to soften up a situation like that so we can see what's going on. And sooner or later, as I'm doing that, then I'm going to disidentify and I'm going to see what's going on and say, yippee, I'm here now. I can see how it's doing what it's doing. And then usually we get to enjoy that for a very short amount of time, and then the next thing comes along. It's like, okay, now here's the next layer down, okay, of how conditioning can cause me to suffer, and then we start working on that. And that just goes on and on and on and on.
Yes. It is, like you said, it's a double victory of, being able to see it, and also, just enjoyment of being lit up in a light room, and
You know what I was seeing as you were saying that, Pasha, is that it's a different kind of happiness than we were conditioned to have. We're conditioned to believe in. You know, the kind of happiness we're conditioned to believe in is, you know, like you're saying with, you got to have everything in your life that's the way it needs to be, so there's no urgency. There's no emergencies to be dealt with.
Mm.
Then you'll be happy. But that's just the conditional kind of happiness that's not ever going to happen. But the happiness that comes from, let's see, how to say it, sort of being in the life that's ours, you know, living the life that is ours to live, doing the work of ending our own suffering, having those victories happen over and over again as we more and more deeply look to see how we cause ourselves to suffer and how to be free of suffering. Even though from conditioning's point of view, that doesn't look like happiness, because there's a lot of painful stuff that still goes on. But from the heart, that's a very happy place, because we're engaged with life and we're involved in our transformation and we're going someplace. You know, we have a beautiful life going towards something that is also beautiful. And it's so good to know that kind of happiness is available, because the other one is just so impossible to attain.
Yeah, and it's boring.
And boring. And boring, too, on top of it. Yeah. Yeah, really, because who really wants to have everything just kind of lined up all the time? That wouldn't be any fun. It's more fun to be on this adventure uncovering what life is all about and how life works. It's just endlessly fascinating. It just never ends.
Yes. And I'm infinitely grateful for the support I have from the Sangha and all this, practice tools and my sitting group and, you know, so many things that surrounds me and helps me in that boat, you know, paddling
mm-hmm.
through.
Yeah, you're not by yourself in the boat, are you?
No.
Yeah, we're very lucky people.
Yes, we are.
We really are. You know, a lot of people aren't having that experience. A lot of people are by themselves in the boat. Paddling around in circles.
Mm.
But we're very lucky.
Yes. Well, thank you so much, and thank you for taking my call.
Thank you, Pasha. Thanks a lot for calling in.
All right. Thank
you. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
All right. Bye.
Thanks for joining us, Pasha. Justin, it's 1 minute to the hour.
All right. That's good, huh?
Yes, would you like to take another call, or are we going to close it up here?
Maybe you ought to just kind of close it up here. That's probably not enough time to get started with somebody.
Yes. It's been wonderful to have you on the air today.
Thanks, Michael. Great to be here, as always. Love the show. Normally listening to it with the other monks sitting in the meditation hall or on the west porch, and it's kind of fun to be able to participate on this end, too. But either way, it's a great service that you're doing, you and Sherry are doing every week.
Thank you. It's as you said, the gratitude goes in every direction. So.
Mm-hmm. It really does.
All righty. Thank you, Justin.
Okay, thank you. Take care.
You too. Good night.
Bye-bye.